You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. There are any number of custom design and fabrication companies, but Urban Ashes is very special. It's the only one with the motto, Reclaiming Trees and Lives. The Celine Company makes a wide array of items for businesses and homes, making them from wood that's carefully salvaged from abandoned homes and businesses in the Detroit area. And that once-forgotten wood is crafted by a once-forgotten workforce, ex-offenders, and young people close to falling into that path that could lead to jail or prison. Trees and lives reclaimed. Paul Hickman is the founder, president, and CEO of Urban Ashes, and he is here with us. Now, Paul, welcome. It's so good to have you here to talk about this.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So, a custom design and fabrication company with a very deep social conscience.
You are correct. My background was more in the environmental aspect of it and the non-toxic finishes, locally sourced materials. That was my experience for well over 15, 20 years at that point. But then the social aspect of it that was instilled from the beginning was a key element, but it was not as much the focus, or at least not in the forefront of my mind. Now it is definitely the number one focus for us.
So how did that come to be? You start out, as you say, with a very clear idea of the kind of products you wanted to make and the way you wanted to make them.
Clear idea. Obviously, 3 years of R&D maybe finally got to a clear idea. The first 3 years, we were developing that quote-unquote clear idea. When we started, we focused on being a photo frame company. We were actually initially focusing on urban salvage wood, which is street trees, yard trees, storm damaged trees, blight stricken trees, such as the Emerald Ash Borer, which is what we came out of. I helped start an organization in 2005 called the Urban Wood Project that has the Urban Wood Marketplace down in Recycle Ann Arbor and in multiple other locations around the state now. But it was growing every year, and after about 3 or 4 years, myself and one of the other founders, Jason Bing, got back together and we wanted to come up with a product that we could scale nationally, because we were just touching the tip of the iceberg with selling product down at the Reuse Center. I had had experience doing furnishings, restaurant retail interiors, and I'd also been doing a lot of work with my now 17-year-old. He was a lot younger then, but doing these collaborative prints, and we were doing our own frames. And I had a lot of experience with urban salvage wood, and I knew, going back to why we focused on photo frames for urban salvage wood, is because there's some innate characteristics you have to deal with that, and also feature. It's a double thing. You want to be able to feature them, but you also have some limitations in the fact that the trees are not as tall, a little shorter, a little squat. These are trees that are growing in your front yard that aren't necessarily fighting for light in a forested situation, so they lounge around a little bit more, which gives them some incredible character, but that character also generally leads to more difficulty in working with it, and also a much wider variety of character within the wood. So in the custom framing industry, one of the issues you deal with is that the wood needs to look pretty much like what you see up on the wall as a sample. In a photo frame industry, when you walk into a store, it's what you see is what you get. And so we started focused on that and then evolved into doing the custom framing and moved across the country into about 240, 250 locations in 40 plus states now. And then very quickly within the first year, we started in 2009, but by 2010, 2011, we were introducing our denailed collection, which is what you referenced about wood coming out of houses and buildings in the Detroit metro area. That's even expanded. We've kind of outgrown the capacity, believe it or not, for Detroit to provide enough material. So our wood is coming from all over the state of Michigan, the deconstructed wood. Some of it's from Detroit. Some of it's from up in the thumb, different parts around the state.
When did the light bulb go off in your mind that this work with this reclaimed wood was a perfect fit for giving jobs to returning citizens, people who had been incarcerated and were looking to rebuild their lives?
Probably the first time I worked side by side or saw some of our crew working and hearing their stories. You know, when you're not connected with it or it's not part of your story or directly, and oddly enough, over the years, I've learned my story is a whole lot closer than I initially realized. But once I got to meet some of these people, probably one of the very first ones, a guy named Calvin Evans, technically our first employee, who's now moved on to, he helped start a program and is running a program called DLive in Detroit, which is a violence intervention program that's doing incredible work in Detroit. But once I start hearing kind of their stories and working side by side with them, a lot of my stigmas and barriers and things that, you know, that have been implanted in me from society or whatever I had been exposed to started coming down. And I started thinking, you know, this is a pretty amazing dynamic that this is. It really took Mary King, who is She, at the time, she was the head of the Michigan Prisoner Reentry Initiative for Washtenaw County and helped start it for the state. And Mary connected me with a lot of these guys. And Mary's the one who you referenced our sort of tagline now, Reclaiming Trees and Lives. She said that in defining us one day in a meeting with me, she said, you're reclaiming trees and lives. And I thought, wow, that's pretty heavy duty. And today it's still a hard thing for me to, you know, use that as our tagline, because to me it's such a bold statement. But in reality, I think our crew feels the same way. So if they're good with it, I'm good with it. Over the years that we've been doing this, I've been able to realize that, and these guys say it all the time, that working on the wood is like working on themselves, that they look at the wood as something that society typically would have discarded or had discarded, like their lives had been discarded, and they're working on themselves and creating a product in two products, one, a product and a person that is now highly desirable.
This process, exactly. This working and then bringing in young people who are perhaps wandering down the wrong road and letting them be part as a mentor-mentee relationship with folks that have lessons to teach.
Correct. And that was another, and again, I don't know if there's happy accidents, or I think a lot of this is, you know, the circles you put yourself in and the circles you choose to go after. A year and a half ago or so, in the summer of 2016, mm-hmm. my oldest son, the one I was talking to about earlier, he and I were talking about looking for some work during the summer that wasn't just a typical summer job, that was some community service type thing. And we worked with a woman in Ypsilanti who has a program who's working with youth in high school and junior high school that have been struggling with their academics, and he went over as a tutor. And we got really busy that summer, and I started thinking, okay, this would be a good summer job for some of these kids. Maybe they would like to come over and work with us. And I called up Gail Wolkoff, who's the director of that, and asked her if, you know, she thought she might have a couple kids. And she said, oh, absolutely. And I think we got four. Several of them stayed on with us for upwards of a year, year and a half, and have moved on to some other things. But that connected us with this youth aspect that we didn't have really before. And what we started realizing is some of our older crew that had done time in prison, we have two guys who did over 20 years in prison, and watch the dynamic happening in their engagement with the younger crew. I'll never forget one of the first guys who we'll talk to later, Drew, when he first came in. After he left, when we first met him, Rob said to me that was me at 17, and I didn't get any help, and just said, I'm not letting this kid go the same route as I did. And this kid's got similar attitude about life and things, and I'm going to work with this kid. And that, to me, clicked a light bulb. And we're speaking of light bulbs.
Yeah.
Definitely is like, okay, this is a dynamic that is really missing for both sides, because this is also now providing an opportunity for guys that have done their time in prison and paid their dues there, but really given back to society in a manner to kind of close.
I hear what you're saying. Pay old debts, exactly.
And really and directly back to the area of community that they most impacted. They need to speak to that more than I do. I get to witness it and watch it from the outside, and it's amazing to watch.
What kind of reaction do you get, Paul, from potential customers when they realize that the folks making these products have this kind of, you should say, it's a dual reclamation, mm-hmm. trees and life?
It's pretty amazing, because there's an incredibly high percentage of people that have had somebody really close to them in their life or themselves that have had issues or contact with the Justice Department or somebody whose family member has been incarcerated. And you just don't see too many instances where businesses or elements of society are really trying to reach out to that population. We have over 2 million people incarcerated in this country, and over 90-95% of them are going to come out at some point. What are we going to do as a society to reacclimate these people as citizens back? Because they're citizens just like us, and getting them back into society is going to take some effort, and it's going to take some understanding. But these people start to see that, and it's amazing. I guess what I was trying to say is that the customers that we work with, or we sell a lot of wholesale, and then they pass that on to their customers. So sometimes we don't get to see the final interaction, but it's a key part of our story, and they get to be part of that process and let them know in a sort of indirect way. It's direct, but it's kind of fed through the line that, you know, hey, we're here with you and we're supporting you on this, and we appreciate what you're doing and the work you're doing to reacclimate back into society and give back to society and be productive, which is, you know, a pretty amazing thing to be part of.
And you talked about what you used to carry before you began working with your team, with kind of old stigmas and attitudes. What do you want to say to potential employers who could be in the position of employing a returning citizen?
The way that I put this is why it's important to me to have sort of a clean slate, and I don't necessarily, legislation helps because legislation or policy sets a tone in society for us, and that's where I'm kind of feeding back on what is society sort of dictated as acceptable or the norm, and having somebody carry that stigma of being an ex-felon for the rest of their life, because it's a life sentence. You may get out of prison after 3 years, 5 years, 20 years, but you're going to carry that with the rest of your life. It is a scarlet letter that you will have to carry, and that's the way our society is set up now. And so looking to change that attitude and belief is monumental. Policy helps because policy sets a tone. However, in talking to businesses, I'm going to speak to businesses that if you don't truly consider interviewing and honestly interviewing people who are returning citizens, people coming out of the prison population, or youth that have had contact with the juvenile justice department, you are missing out on what I would say, or my personal experience, arguably one of the most dedicated staff members you'll ever have. There was a really good, and I can't mention names of companies, but for example, we were in at a conference recently, and the head of HR for a double-digit billion-dollar international corporation said that if his company did background checks further than 10 years, he would have never been hired. And he was highly skilled. My point is that company didn't go back as far as they could have. And so that's standard. And they're looking to change even and get more aggressive in how they are, they're open, more of an open hiring practice. But we're missing massive amounts of opportunities here. But we have, particularly in the state of Michigan, we have an incredible drain on our talent pool. A lot of our youth are leaving. And so we've got this youth population that is chomping at the bit to work because most people aren't giving them the opportunity. And once you give these people the opportunity, the give back is pretty impressive. They understand that you gave them a chance where 100 others, and I'm often, you know, not exaggerating there, 100 other companies wouldn't even talk to them. Soon as they saw that they had a felony issue, or soon as they, you know, had these very, you know, see that these various issues as a juvenile, and some of them could be 20, 30, 40 years old convictions, mm-hmm. and they won't even talk to them. Even though they were ready to hire them, they were excited about them for every other reason that they were highly skilled at it, that one element kicked them off. And I think it's a shame for the company. I think the company's missing out on a massive opportunity, a labor pool that is incredibly gifted and skilled, as well as probably more than anything. The most important thing to me when I'm hiring somebody is what's your commitment going to be and your commitment to learn and learn what we need at our company to do. And these folks have that commitment because a lot of them have missed a huge chunk of their life. They've got time that they're trying to make up.
So you have seen this whole concept grow from photo frames, picture frames, to something much bigger.
Correct. We went from photo frames to custom framing and slowly started introducing back in furniture elements, which was a passion of mine prior. And I built a little bit of a reputation as a furniture designer, but we focused on adding in commercial contract furnishings for restaurant, retail, and hospitality. Tabletops in particular, but also some other furnishings there. And then lastly, in the last 2 to 3 years, we've really been ramping up a lot of work with other companies all over the country doing OEM work where we're manufacturing. OEMs traditionally focused on the automotive industry or the tech industry, but we're basically producing a product that goes into a different finished product for another company. And that we're doing where we're sending out hundreds to thousands of frames at a time to one company, and then they're distributing, putting in their product. And then the two combined create a new product that are shipped out all over the country, actually all over the world.
And you've got commercial and residential. And I know if somebody's been down at the Detroit Foundation Hotel, for example, they've seen your work. You're all over custom tables and benches and picture frames and bar tops and wall cladding and materials. So it's really growing.
We are definitely growing, and that's a good thing. We have a lot of wood to keep out of the landfills and a lot of people to employ.
Well, you can see the products created by the team at Urban Ashes and learn more about their mission of reclaiming trees and lives by going to the website, urbanashes.com. There's a great video. I urge everyone to watch that video. You'll really get a sense of who these folks are and the kind of products they're making. Paul Hickman, founder, president, and CEO of Urban Ashes, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And now we turn to a couple members of the Urban Ashes production team. Rob Richmond is a production manager and mentor to younger workers. Rob, welcome. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
And Andrew Kruszewski is a production worker and one of the younger team members who are being mentored. Welcome, Andrew, and thank you so much for being here with us.
Hi. Thank you for inviting me.
Rob, I want to talk about your path to Urban Ashes and your life before you found this job.
Well, I grew up in Warren, Michigan, the youngest of six children. Grew up in an okay neighborhood. It was surrounded by a tank plant by the railroad tracks, kind of like a Stand By Me scenario with fields and stuff. And probably around the age of like 13 or 14, I started using drugs. My dad passed away, and I started smoking marijuana and drinking. And it just ultimately led to a path of destruction of my entire life.
Which led to what?
When I was 19 years old, I was convicted of second-degree murder. I did 23 years and some months in prison for that and got out 3 years ago.
3 years ago. What was it like once you got out of prison and you wanted to start rebuilding your life and finding a job is key to that?
Well, when I got out, I put in hundreds of applications, at least 120. Went to various interviews. Got some positive feedback, got, you know, I'm going to call you back, well, you'll hear from us, and then never hear from them. And, you know, I decided when I got out, because I changed my entire life and the way I think and the way I deal with stuff and the choices I make, obviously, that I was very honest and upfront with every employer. Like, this is what happened. I made bad choices when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. I was trying to just be as upfront as possible to see my honesty in that I wanted to work and that I was reliable. And, you know, I even offered some employers, I'll work 2 days for free. If you don't like my work ethic, we can cut ties there. And there was a big issue of, as soon as I started being honest and telling them that I was a felon and trying to get my life together, I could see the switch turn off on a lot of people. I've had employers tell me to my face, you're a liability, I cannot hire you. We had a neighbor that lived across from me and my wife. He happened to be one of the retailers for Urban Ashes in Ann Arbor. And he actually talked to my wife about it before, but it was like building frames. I don't know nothing about building mm-hmm. frames. So finally I went and talked to him and asked him about, you know, what is this job opportunity? And he told me that, you know, it was Paul Hickman, that, you know, he actually hired felons and that wouldn't be a problem. So I emailed Paul. He probably about a week later emailed me back and called me in for an interview, and I talked to Calvin, who was the HR at that time, and got a job.
And how long have you been there now?
It's 3 years.
What do you like about the work?
Oh, the work is awesome. It's always different. It's always changing. We're always doing different projects. You're working with salvaged wood that otherwise would have been discarded, burned, throughout in the landfills or whatever. And we're taking this stuff that was going to be discarded and we're making beautiful furniture, beautiful frames, beautiful tables, you know, or other projects that Paul's designed.
And they're going all over the place and are going to last a long, long time because you just look at the pictures of these, they're solid, beautifully made pieces.
Exactly. Yeah, it's wonderful. Mm. And I wouldn't trade it for the world.
And Andrew, you've just turned 18?
That is correct.
What was going on with your life before you came to Urban Ashes?
Before I'd come to Urban Ashes, I was involved in a program called Youth Build at Washtenaw Community College. It's a program that helps people who dropped out of high school get their GED, get some work skills, some construction certificates. It's a great program. After that, I'd gotten a call from my old probation officer, Gina Steffi, and she had asked if I was looking for a job in that field. And that another probation officer, Stephen Hall, he had been talking to Paul about hiring someone from the program I was in. And then, Steve connected me to Paul, and
here you are. Yep. Here you are. What was going on that brought you in contact with the justice system?
I had ran away from home when I was 14, and there was a lot of chaos at my household, both households. My parents are divorced. More than anything, I think I just wanted to escape it. I didn't have anyone to talk to. School felt like it was just more pressure about it. So I'd connected with some people with similar mindsets, went into using drugs, breaking into houses, trying to get money for more drugs to eventually leave, drive away from the state, as if that would be better.
Sure.
But eventually I got arrested, 3 times to be specific. The third time I couldn't pass a drug test. They were really shocked at how much THC was in my system. And They had sent me to a True North Treatment Center, which is right next to the juvenile detention at Washtenaw Ave. Mm-hmm. And I'd spent about 9 months in there, and it's an intensive program. There's five therapists. It's maximum security. I got to say, the food was pretty good. But after 9 months, I went into outpatient, and I started going back to school at Youth Build. And then I graduated probation.
And what do you like about the work you're doing at Urban Ashes?
Like Rob said, one of the biggest aspects is it's always changing. You know, there's not a whole lot of monotony with it. There's always a new stick or a new piece of wood or something else that needs to be done to this particular frame, this particular table. When I'm finished working with the wood, whether it be a frame of hard maple or a table of pine or some walnut, it's amazing just to sit there and look at, like, we have done this. From this that was all tarnished, torn up, it's going to get thrown away, and now it's this beautiful table that someone can use for who knows how long.
And you've got Rob as a mentor.
That is correct.
What does that mean to you?
Rob and another coworker, Aurelio, who are both have spent time in prison, they're really big inspirations to me. I've talked with them about a lot of subjects and situations in my life, and what they share with me and their experience, strength, and hope is something that really inspires me almost daily. As well, they can also teach me discipline as well with the job, you know?
They've been there.
Yeah.
Someone else can talk till they're blue in the face, but mm-hmm. they haven't been there.
That's correct.
And for you, Rob, as you see Andrew coming in, what were your thoughts when you met him?
When I met him, he was he reminded me of me. He was kind of a wall. It was even down to I was showing him something about sanding where he was like, just give me the sander, and like he was going to do it. And that's kind of the attitude I had, is I can do anything and I don't need no help. Andrew's really become like a right hand of mine in the shop. Him and I are always early, and we talk about personal stuff before our day even starts. It's just been like an awesome experience having somebody and seeing him change and seeing him gradually get better about a lot of things. You know, we all make mistakes in life, and usually we learn from them mistakes. And it's not that I point them out to him, but, you know, unless it's something on the wood, but on a personal level, like, we talk about the stuff and I tell him my experiences with whatever problems he's having. It's just been a great thing for me because it gives me a sense of pride feeling I'm giving back to somebody that was potentially going on a wrong path. And I think with him, he was already on the right path before I even met him. Like, I see the change and the want to change and to be better in life in general from him. That's been a great experience.
You're kind of smiling. It's like, not like a dad, but kind of like a, what, friend, dad, uncle? What do you think when you think of Rob?
Rob.
Really quick, I did that first sand. You know I did a good job. But,
exactly, my point.
I look at Rob as definitely some kind of figure. I wouldn't say a father figure, but definitely someone I can look up to, and there's always something new every day I can take from his character. Same with Aurelio, same with all our other coworkers. I'm always looking for the best in people that I can apply to myself. Rob and Aurelio definitely have a certain kind of strength to make it through, you know, changing their lives and dealing with the mistakes they made. A lot of times it's overlooked, and I'm trying my hardest not to overlook it.
And how are you doing in your recovery from the drug and alcohol use?
Today I'm about 2 years and 3 weeks and I believe 6 days sober.
And I'm seeing a smile on your face.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And is this work a key part of that, the kind of things you're doing with your hands every day and coming in around this team?
Definitely. There's two main aspects. One is that there's always something to do. There's like a purpose every day. I wake up tired, nonetheless, but I wake up, I come to work, and it's like, okay, let's get this done. And then the second part is it's a daily reminder of myself.
Where do you see this young man, Rob? Where do you see him at your age?
I see him being highly successful because he's very driven. That's one of the things I admire about him, and I actually just had a conversation with another coworker about this the other day. As I said, I wish I was as driven and had my stuff together as much as he did, and he really focuses on education and stuff like that, that where I wasn't focused on that at that age. I was focused more on getting high and using drugs and stealing and whatever else to get more drugs, and I'm very proud of him and to know him.
Rob, what do you hope prospective employers will take away from this conversation that we're having right now and from what you and others at Urban Ashes have done?
Well, one of the things I really hope they take from this is that people make mistakes and bad choices early in their life. And, you know, a lot of the time we pay for them with a big part of our life. And the recidivism rate of people that do over 15 years is like below 7%. Mostly everybody I know that's done over that amount of time really are sincere about getting their life together. And I just hope that they'll give these guys another chance. And I mean, some of them will be the best employees you'll ever have. They're dedicated to getting their life together, and some of them are behind. So they work harder to make up for the lost time.
Well, congratulations to both of you on the beautiful products you're turning out at Urban Ashes and the work you're all doing with each other. We really want to thank you for sharing your stories with us.
Well, thank you for having us here.
Thank you.
And we've been talking with Rob Richmond, who's a production manager, and Andrew Kucheski, production worker at Urban Ashes.